Welcome to Women, Work, Wellbeing. I'm your host, Zoe Hayden-Jones. Each week, expect a blend of heartfelt conversations, expert advice, and actionable tips designed to support you in achieving your professional goals, finding harmony in your personal life, and cultivating wellbeing that resonates with who you truly are. This is more than a podcast. It's a community, a movement, and your personal catalyst for transformation. Welcome to another episode of Women, Work, Wellbeing. I am delighted to welcome this week's guest. We have Kate Waterfall-Hill, who is a leadership coach. Welcome to the podcast, Kate.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
I am delighted to see you. And I feel like I already know you because, I mean, we are going to talk about your incredible TikTok channel, but you know when you feel like you know someone already. So it's just, I'm really excited today. So talk to us. Leadership coach just sounds like what every woman needs in their life. Talk to us about what you do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, funnily enough, it is one of those things that I wish I'd had 30 years ago when I started out in business. I mean, I was lucky enough that I did have a great boss and mentor, but he wasn't trained as a coach, which is a slightly different technique. And it's just really having somebody walking alongside you who maybe has walked in your step, you know, alongside, you know, in your shoes before, but it's not necessarily the case. You don't have to be, you know, I don't have to know about neuroscience to be able to coach a neuroscientist, for instance. But it does help to have been a leader to be able to coach other leaders. And it's really just about having that confidential conversation that is guided. It's not just a chat. It's not just your mate down the pub giving you some advice and saying, oh, tell me about it. I know, you know, I've got an awful boss as well, or I've got a team member who's not performing as well. And sort of telling you their own anecdotes in response. It's a conversation where you're bringing your, you know, leadership challenges to the session, and then the coach just digs deep with asking some really amazing questions. Hopefully, anyway, that are well timed, pertinent questions that evoke some new awareness in you, a different mindset, different perspective, and you know that's why I have a coach too, because even though I know the principles of coaching. That I know that, you know, you should sit and self-reflect and you should, think about maybe how you approach something and what you might have done differently and what you could try next time or what you wish you'd said or how you wish you'd reacted. Actually, when you have that conversation with somebody else, articulating the issue to them and then having them ask you questions is a totally different thing. And for some reason, there is magic in coaching. Trusting the process is the most amazing thing. And often people come away going, wow, why didn't I think of that on my own? Or you know, what? Now I've said it to you out loud, it seems so obvious what the answer is, but actually having a coaching session is a different thing altogether. So I do one-to-one coaching and I also do group coaching, which is, again, another great mechanism for finding solutions and feeling like you're not alone. Because I think often, I don't just coach women, I do coach men as well, but most of my clients on the group coaching I'd say it's probably 70% women. There is a sense of feeling lonely. You know, you get promoted to a job and you can't really confide in your team members or your peers or your line manager that you don't really know what you're doing because nobody's trained you. Nobody's given you a good role model. Nobody's supported you. And then, you know, people come to the group coaching and find that they've got a home.
I think that is, yeah, we often don't think about that, do we? That it's almost like when you climb the ranks, we did a really good a masterclass with a confidence coach, and she said that like we as we climb the ladder or the ranks in a company, we don't get the feedback as much, so we might feel unconfident. But I think that's really interesting what you said about that you can't really have that a person to confide in, and we are human, aren't we, at the end of the day? So that's powerful. So did you work your way up in corporate? What was the story? What drew you to becoming a specific leadership coach?
So this is my sort of third career. I've pivoted twice. So my first career was in a marketing agency, PR and sports marketing agency, which I joined straight from university. And we were 12 people when I started, 60 people when I left 15 years later. And I was made managing director at 29. So I was managing director of a lot of people who were older than me, men and women. And it was, it was interesting. Interesting course of a career. So I rose really quickly. I was a manager within 6 months of starting, and my management style then, I wouldn't necessarily say I was terribly proud of, but you know, I feel like if you're not if you're not failing fast, then you're not learning either. You know, you've got to go through the motions. And that's why having a coach is good, because it accelerates that learning, because you're not necessarily having to try and fail on the job. You're having the experience in a coaching conversation, and then hopefully finding some solutions that you can then put in place straight away. So, so there's the first 15 years of my career. And then I started on my own in 2007 as effectively a small business management consultant, because I'd loved running the agency. I really loved that, you know, we worked with massive brands. We worked with Vodafone and Virgin and Eon and what have you. But really what I loved, what really lit me up, was nurturing talent, managing people, you know, turning people from maybe underperformers into star performers, and also running a mid-sized business. So that's what I've been. I've been a sort of right-hand person for other, usually men actually, who don't enjoy the detail. You know, they've got the entrepreneurial spirit, they've passion for their subject, really get what you know, what their thing is, you know, steam trains or water management or telecoms. Those are the three main ones I've worked in, industries I've worked in. But they didn't really want to get involved with, you know, whether it's from, you know, HR, marketing, finance, IT, mergers and acquisitions. You know, I've helped people do exits and things like that. So that was my second career. And then more recently pivoted to leadership coaching, because I realized that the thing I really loved was that nurturing talent piece.
Oh, wow. What a career. That's really interesting that you were made manager in 6 months, and then you grew, you know, to 60. I mean, that's not an easy task. Do you think we're inbuilt as leaders, or do you think it can be, you can train someone up to be an amazing leader?
Well, to my mind, we're all leaders, even if we're individual contributors, or, you know, you don't work at all, even, you're still leaders of your own life. You've got to have a life, and hopefully a household and food to buy and people to interact with in the shops and utilities companies to you know, argue with about your direct debit, whatever it is. Because to my mind, leadership is about influencing positive outcomes. That's the point of being a leader. So you can do that just as a one-man band. Or as I say, not working at all, you know, just being the leader of your family or your household. And so even more so when you are given people to manage, yes, you do need to have some leadership skills, but they can be, I think they can be taught. And some of it's about just bringing out your natural strengths and your natural talents and your values and your beliefs, and actually working out how that translates into an authentic leadership. So when I'm coaching people, I'm not coaching people to be identikits of each other or identikits of me. I'm bringing out the strengths in them and saying, okay, how could you apply that to this challenge? And how might you, you know, flex your behavior or your tone, how you approach this situation, thinking of it from another perspective, in order to create to influence a positive outcome. And that's really what I encourage people to do, is have this eye on the outcome.
That's so powerful, isn't it? Like, if you think about it, if every organization did this training, because I interviewed Cheryl Thompson, and we had a conversation about accidental managers and then becoming leaders. But if every organization invested in, you know, the work that you're doing, it's kind of like, then the ripple effect, the changes that could be made would be huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I say to people when I'm doing, because I do workshops as well as one-to-one coaching and group coaching. And I say to people, I really want you to get the most out of today, because you've been told to sit in the room and you're going to have a whole load of emails piled up while we're here. And I want to make best use of your time. So I ask you to bring your best self to the day, but also to understand that we're here for a reason, probably to make, you know, some improvements, or to get some alignment or some agreement, or come up with some ideas, whatever the reason is that we're there. But ultimately, it's because we want to be, you know, to enjoy our jobs and to do them well. And that not only makes us feel good, you know, to be a good leader is such a great feeling. You get to the end of the week and think, yeah, I did all right this week. Not I just scraped by the skin of my teeth, but actually I did okay this week. But not only will you feel great as a leader, you'll feel, you know, your team will feel better, you know, motivated and inspired and feel like they're working in a great place and feel that energy. But also the ripple effect of that is that they then, and you also go home, you when you're with your family and your friends, you're you know, just a happier person. So actually the ripple effect as you say, not only is with the leader, with their teams, and the, therefore with the whole organization, it's also with everybody, you know, so, you know, all the touch points that you have, because you're more likely to be, you know, a positive person with, you know, purpose and clarity outside of work as well as in work.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear you. And a lot of what we talk about at Jobs for Women is the whole, you know, having the same opportunities, regardless of gender. What comes up quite a lot is, especially when we're doing our outreach with like the early careers or like our younger listeners and our younger members in the membership, is the lack of role models. So we know that companies with more women make more money, they're more diverse, they have a different approach, more strategic. So do you think, for anyone listening that's thinking, I want to be a leader, I could be a leader, is there a route? Like, you've been there and done it, got the t-shirt. What skills does someone need? What can they do to set that trajectory?
Well, I think that the interesting thing is now is that the world is changing slowly, but surely, I'm hoping, and that team members are expecting a more authentic, empathetic leadership. And that is a great opportunity for women, because I think women tend to be, and it's not always the case, but tend to be more emotionally intelligent. Not always, you know, there are emotionally intelligent men, don't get me wrong, this isn't about man bashing, is it? It's about lifting up women, lifting up everybody, actually, isn't it? And so you know, naturally, as things progress, I think that there should be more opportunities for women, but it's an opportunity to be unapologetically empathetic, vulnerable, and authentic, rather than trying to be like the men. Because if you think that you've got to be like super assertive and super decisive, and that's just not your natural style, it will be obvious. You know, you just got to be authentic. So I'm sort of hoping that naturally things will come. But as we all know, with any sort of mass behavioural change, it's really hard to affect. So if you think about, I'm not suggesting that gender difficulties are the same as smoking, but bear with me on this analogy. So you've got behavioural change specialists who, you know, the government have employed to try to get us to stop smoking or reduce people smoking. So in the 80s, there were, you know, huge campaigns with, you know, pictures of lungs and pictures of, you know, cigarettes, you know, with you know, showing how it would look like a clogged artery. And the shock tactic of that was really effective in the first instance. But after a while, the shock just sort of diminished. You got used to seeing these horrible lungs and these horrible cigarettes. And it sort of wasn't, it didn't have the ongoing effect. And also the government couldn't afford to spend millions and millions of pounds every month doing this advertising. But in the end, they changed the legislation so that you couldn't smoke in public places. And that has been the thing that has had the biggest effect. So in the same way, I sort of sense that it's going to have to be more and more legislation. We're getting there, aren't we? You know, gender pay is being looked at in the bigger organisations. And, you know, things like shared parental leave, those sorts of things will hopefully mean that in, say, small businesses, which really have a tricky job when it comes to recruitment and retention and having people going on leave, it's really hard for small businesses to cope with, you know, if they have a big bank of women who are all in their 20s and 30s and they're all going on maternity leave at the same time, it can be a bit of headache for managers, and I get that. But if we've got this shared parental leave, then that goes away in a way, because, you know, you're not saying, oh, actually, do you know what, when we're recruiting, I'm going to hire the young guy, I'm not going to hire the young girl because she's going to go off. Actually, the likelihood is both of them are going to go off. So it sort of levels the playing field a little bit. So I'm hoping that more and more we'll get to a situation where naturally the skills, the more feminine skills, I suppose, in leadership are becoming the norm, because we don't want command and control anymore as a leadership type. We want to align and enable. Do you know what I mean by those things?
Could you talk us through that?
Yeah. So you know, in days gone by, command and control was the thing. You know, you had, you know, a leader at the top who was very, you know, patriarchal, and it would be, you know, this is what we do and this is how you do it, and, you know, my way or the highway. And people just sort of accepted that, and that was okay. And in some instances, you need that. You know, you need to have processes and procedures for, factories, for instance, or in healthcare. You know, you can't have every doctor and nurse deciding on how they're going to do that particular bit of surgery. You know, there's a protocol, right? You know, you have to follow it. But, you know, in a normal office environment, in a normal corporate world, there are, you know, you don't need to be so prescriptive. So the world is moving more towards align and enable. And by that, I mean, the leader sets out the vision, gives you the why, if you were Simon Sinek, you know, the purpose, sets out the why. The manager sets out the what, you know, the expectations, the milestones, the deliverables, the budget, the resources, that sort of thing. You know, so sets out the specifics of the expectations. But then the coach, so these are the sort of three elements of what I believe makes a great leader. The leader setting out the why, the manager setting out the what, but then the coach helps the other person set out how they're going to do it. So they're aligning them with the vision, they're giving them really clear expectations and clarity of that part and what their role is, but then they're enabling them to work out the how. And that's the difference between command and control, do as I say, and align and enable.
That's so interesting. And, you know, I'm so grateful that it is starting to change and you can see the shift. Just going back to the authenticity piece, because there is a lot, isn't there, out there about how, you know, women leaders might have to conform to the gender bias or the gender expectation. We know there's conscious and unconscious bias. If there's any women listening, have you got any advice on that? Obviously, we talked about authenticity. You know, we shouldn't have to change our personality, should we? Yeah. So if someone's listening, if there's people, I guess, that are expecting a woman leader to act a certain way, is there any advice that you can give them on how to navigate that?
Sure. I mean, my personal view is the first stage of actually anybody's career, and people probably should be doing this at school, actually, is actually to really understand themselves. So having the tools to do some self-reflection and really dig deep into what your values are. And your values will change over time, because as somebody was saying to me the other day that they did a values piece with an external consultant, and they said that your values never change. I don't believe that, because I think when you're in your 20s, your values might include adventure and risk and all these sort of exciting things, because you've got the freedom to do that. And then as you get older, you know, we tend to have more responsibilities, you know, whether or not you have family, and we tend to be more risk averse, and we want more, you know, it's more about, you know, stability and actually maybe a bit more about something like sustainability or the environment or you know, nurturing talent, like one of mine is, or doing meaningful work, making an impact. Those sorts of things. But doing some work on your values to really know who you are gives you so many tools, because it gives you the language and the ability to articulate what's important to you. And therefore, you can make decisions more easily. You've got really clear on your boundaries. And one of the things that I wanted to make sure I don't forget to say to you today is about women and people pleasing. And it's not only women that tend to people please. But a lot of women I coach sort of say, oh, I just want to do the best. And this is what happens, particularly when you're in leadership, because, you know, if you've been promoted to a leadership position, whether it's a sort of, you know, team leader, manager, director, you know, however high we're talking, it's probably because you've been a high achiever. You know, you've done really well at what you do. So you've studied hard at school, you've studied hard at university, maybe, if you've done that. And then you're one of those people who say, yeah, I'll do that extra project, or yes, I can do that task. And then you get promoted. And then you get promoted. And so you carry on saying, oh, yes, I'll do that. Yes, I can take on this extra project. Oh, don't worry if so-and-so leaves, I can make up the difference. And oh, we've got a headcount freeze now, so I can't recruit anybody else. Never mind, I'll just work extra hours. And we do it and we do it and we do it. And eventually, you know, you've got to say no, because if you're saying yes to this, what are you saying no to in your private life, with your health, with your own mental health, with seeing your family and friends? If you're constantly saying yes in a bid to people please, actually you're pleasing nobody, let alone yourself. So that's one trait I would say to be aware of as a woman in business. It's really easy to think that you need to say yes in order to prove yourself. And actually, I would say, learning when and how it's appropriate to say no, you'll be doing not only yourself but also your team a favor, because you'll be advocating for your team.
Yeah, I can totally
I rambled on about that, but I just
I love it. This is why I love this podcast, because I'll always you know, formulate questions, but it just becomes so like, yeah. We get so passionate about it. And I think your advice, because your experience is so vast, there are so many women listening now that think, yeah, that's me. I'm doing inner work on the whole people pleasing thing. And someone I have known and worked with for years says to me, Zoe, no is a full sentence. And I'm like, yes, I can say no. So for women listening that have potentially, you know, like I said, saying, yep, that's me. Is there a way to start easing back? Or do you just immediately start saying, nope? Can you shift? Will there be a consequence to changing the way you've perhaps been saying yes to everything?
Yeah, I certainly think it might be dangerous to be, you know, to go from one to the other overnight. But certainly, you know, if you've got a good enough relationship with whoever it is you're dealing with, maybe it's your line manager, you could say, you know, I've been doing some work on my professional development or self-reflection, and I've recognized in myself I have a tendency to want to please and I want to do well. And I've recognized that I need to start staying, you know, I've got some boundaries. So you might notice a change in me and actually, you know, own it. Don't just sort of do it by stealth, because then everyone's like, what the hell's happened to her? You know, she's had personality change overnight. She's suddenly being really difficult. But actually saying, you know, what I want to do is I want to do my best job for you. I want to be as efficient as I can. And I want my team to be as productive and motivated and inspired as they can be. So I'm trying a new thing. And the new thing is being really clear on my boundaries, really clear on the priorities, what's important, not urgent, but what's important. What's going to shift the dial for the team and the organization? What's going to fulfill my own personal goals and the goals of my team? And so, you know, when you give me an extra project, I'm going to say quite possibly yes, but you know what? The project you gave me yesterday is going to have to go on hold for 6 months, you know, and just have a reasonable conversation rather than just being, you know, because you don't want to be known as being the shirty one, you know, the one who just sort of has started saying no on your bike to everybody. You want to still be reasonable. So as long as you put effectively a reverse business case for saying no, do you know what I mean? You know how people say, put a business case in for asking for more resources. Actually, maybe that's one thing you need to do, perhaps, if you're finding you're overworked, is actually put together a business case for more resources. Or it might be to put a business case for saying, do you know what, I'm going to, you know, and I do encourage leaders to look at their tasks, because often we, you know, people are overloaded. So I say to them, okay, when you get a, you know, you're looking at your task list, what can you defer? What can you say no to reasonably without, you know, having a career limiting conversation? What could you simplify? What could you automate? And what could you delegate? So actually having, you know, maybe a list of five on a post-it note on your screen. New task comes in. Okay, I'm just going to check my list. What should I do with that one? Could I automate it? And it might be that you need to, you know, take some time to actually look at whether automation is something you could do. Could you make, you know, could you have AI help you do something? But just because it's so easy just to say, oh, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah. And I think when we're thinking about sort of promotions at work, it links into the people pleasing, doesn't it? Like if you think, oh, well, I want to earn more money or I want a more senior title, so I'm going to do as much as I can possibly do to the detriment of your health, or like you touched on earlier about like what do you then lose out on in your personal life? So I think these conversations are so important. That's why I think coaching is so brilliant. I've been working with a coach recently, so I can really, really resonate with that. Almost like taking a step back and having someone look at it from a different place. So, and I think important for leaders, because like you say, there isn't always that ally that you can talk to because you're leading, aren't you? Yeah. So if someone's listening and whatever stage they're at in their career, what if they want to get to the top, is there anything that they can start to do day to day to do it? Because I loved what you said about that reverse business case. That is just so genius, about instead of just changing immediately, it's kind of like, no, let me explain the why. It's so clever. Is there anything, you know, like that a woman could start to do now to set almost the path to leadership?
I think it's asking for that clarity from your line manager or from your organization to say, what does my career path look like? Because we often assume that everyone knows what we're thinking or wanting. Actually, I was listening to, do you know Gabby Bernstein? Do you know who I mean? Who does the manifestation challenge? Yeah. So I was listening to the manifestation talk this morning, and she was saying, you know, you've got to be clear on what you want, whether it's from your partner or your employer. And it made me think of a TikTok I'm going to do, where surely you just know what I want. I did one yesterday actually about I'm going to have words with her. She never meets my expectations. Do I make my expectations clear? No, but she should just instinctively know, shouldn't she? You know, the irony. But it's the same really with your career aspirations. You know, we sort of assume that our line manager is advocating for us and talking about us, you know, in the higher up conversations when they're talking about who's ready for promotion. But actually they might not be. You know, they might not have clocked that you've got ambition. So there's no harm in saying, and I think a lot of the younger generation that I work with in my corporate work are shying away from having these open and honest conversations. They tend to I hate sweeping generalizations, but I'm going to have to make one. I'm seeing a lot of people being a bit disenchanted with where they are. They feel like they're not moving up the ladder quickly enough. They're not getting the promotions or the pay rises they want. So they just go and find another job. And the first thing the manager knows about it is that the person's resigned and they're like, oh, hold on. But actually, I'd really encourage people to have these conversations. So line managers should be asking their people, not just how this the task going or how's the project running or are you going to meet that deadline, but actually making sure in your one-to-ones you have either a separate one-to-one or a separate part of the one-to-one which talks about their career aspirations or how they're doing, what's going on for them as an individual rather than the tasks, but also that the individuals are open with their line manager what their aspirations are and what their ambitions are. So there's no harm in saying, and people shy away from it because they think, that sounds a bit needy and a bit greedy and a bit demanding, or it sounds a bit like asking for somebody to say they love you. You know, it's a bit like high maintenance. And actually, they should know I want promotion and they should offer it to me and they should offer me a pay rise. I shouldn't have to ask for one. That's the other thing I hear. But actually, you don't need to be demanding and you don't need to be needy. You can just go and say, do you know what? I've got ambitions to grow. I've got places I want to be in the next 5 years. Can we work on a career pathway together? Can you give me some insight into where I could go next? What do I need to do to get the promotion? When are the promotions considered in this business? I don't even know. How do you decide who's going to get promoted next and what are the criteria? Just have that conversation. You've then logged it in their brain, and hopefully when the conversation comes up, Zoe said she wanted promoting. Yeah, she's the right person. Maybe. I mean, it doesn't always happen, but at least you've asked. At least you put the thought in their head.
That is, it's so simple, but I keep saying this on the podcast. I wish I would have known that in my early career. The amount of times I've been like, I want more money, and I haven't used my voice. But this is why I'm so passionate about what we're doing here, because that advice, not only does it make your manager think, oh, wow, they're thinking about a plan for the future, but even the questions of when do promotions come up, you know, it might be that they're every 3 years, whatever. So yeah, great advice. I have to ask you about your TikTok because we've got to wrap up soon. I found Kate with her on her. I'm newer to TikTok. There's a tagline for the podcast. Talk to us. And if I will definitely put a link in the show notes. Talk to us about how your TikTok came about.
Well, I've got 20-year-old and 18-year-old kids, and they're on TikTok. And my eldest actually is on BookTok, and they do book reviews and things. So, you know, I knew there was a commercial element to it in terms of, you know, you could make money from TikTok. And I've been on social media for a bit, you know, having been in marketing, I'm not afraid to be visible. And I was doing reels on Instagram and Facebook, which were just, you know, me talking to camera saying, you know, do you ever find that you procrastinate sometimes? Here are my top three tips for procrastination. And there are lots of people who do that. So I sort of got a bit lost. And then I thought, well, I could do TikTok. Yeah, I could give that a go. I had a glass of wine on a Tuesday night in January last year, 2023. And decided to do it as a skit instead of, I think I might have been wearing this jumper. That's embarrassing. I just decided to do this skit, sort of pretending I was a bad manager talking off screen to somebody else. I don't know. Yeah, I think, this, anyway, it seemed to work. And that first one got loads of views. And I thought, well, I'll do one again tomorrow. And I'll do one again tomorrow. And I've done one every day ever since.
It is absolutely brilliant. You need to watch them, anyone that's listening, because it's the epitome of, we've all experienced the personas that Kate adopts on TikTok. So well done. And that marketing background is just, it's setting the sail for, I love your TikToks, honestly. Well, thank you so much for giving us your time. I can't believe we've already up to our time limit. You've talked about group coaching. You've talked about one-to-ones. If people want to connect with you as well as TikTok, where can they find you?
Well, I'm Kate Waterfall Hill everywhere, and I don't think there's another one of me anywhere. So I think probably if you Google me, you'll probably find me. But I'm on LinkedIn and I'm on TikTok, on Facebook, on Instagram is Kate Waterfall Hill, and my website is waterfallhill.co.uk.
And I love the idea of the group coaching. By the way, I'm all for that. The power of meeting people as well on group coaching is brilliant. And I will put all the links in show notes. This will be in our membership platform if you've not joined. Again, link in show notes so you can access this content and reach Kate at any time. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I've loved every minute. Really, really good to have a chat with you. Thank you.
I loved my chat with Kate, and I hope you did too. I think with her wealth of experience, there is something in that chat for everyone, no matter what stage you are in your career. We covered so many valuable topics around leadership, coaching, personal growth, navigating gender biases, which we know are happening time and time again, and setting yourself up for success in your career. Something that I just didn't do enough of, especially in my early career. So I really want you to take that on board if you can. So some key takeaways that I just wanted to reflect on were, and the first one is, funnily enough, the importance of self-reflection. I just don't think as women we give ourselves enough time to pause and to reflect on where we are in our career, in our life, and where perhaps we want to go, to understand our values and our goals, whether that's personal or professional. Sometimes you just need that pause and that time and that space to think about what you truly want, you know, that connects deeply with your values, with your personal self, your inner self, your inner being. And when you give yourself that time and space, you can then set clear boundaries, which will ultimately, hopefully, avoid burnout. And the other key takeaway is having courageous career conversations. I did not do enough of this. I was a yes person. I was a keep quiet, get my head down, do the work, which was great to a degree for my management. I got the job done. I worked the hours, but I didn't really use my voice. I didn't use my voice enough. And if I had my time to come again in my early career, I'd be more courageous. So I want you to think about that phrase. Courageous career conversations. I want you to take that away and just think, how can I be a little bit more courageous at work, and where do I want to get to? The more open you are with your manager about your own career aspirations, and the more you advocate for yourself, the more you ask about development opportunities, the more doors will open for you. So whether you're just starting out in your career, whether you're mid-career, whether you're looking to transition, whether you're changing your career completely, whether you're going from full-time to part-time, wherever you are, I hope that Kate's insights on everything that we discussed have resonated with you, whether it's one thing that she talks about or everything. I hope you've learned as I did from Kate. And don't forget to connect with her. If you connect with her on LinkedIn, let her know that you found out about Kate and the work that she does through the Work Women Work Wellbeing podcast. Forgot the name of the podcast title, but I'm not going to edit it out because we're all realness over here at Jobs for Women. And don't forget to follow her on TikTok. She is incredible. If you're not on TikTok, this is your opportunity. Create an account and go and follow and interact with Kate. She is phenomenal. So that's it for another episode. I'm so glad that you've been here with me. Don't forget to subscribe, hit the follow button. It means so much and it helps us reach other women like you. And pass this episode forward. If there's anyone that you think would benefit
from listening to Kate's insights and expertise, forward this episode in a WhatsApp or in a message or on an email. And if you've not joined the community, the Jobs for Women community, head over to community.jobsforwomen.co.uk/join. We've got a free members club with free masterclasses. It's got all of our podcast content, including podcast video content, our masterclasses courses, and there's even free yoga and meditation in there. So there's no reason not to be in there, and you'll see me in there too. So that's it for another episode. Take care of yourselves, and I'll see you next week.